The following episode was recorded in front of a live streaming audience on Saturday, December the 21st, 2024.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name.
Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or Else Media.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, episode number 85, The Spy Ring of Rijab Bey.
Howdy, welcome to the Superman Super Show. I'm a host, my name is Ed, and 1,000 miles over there to my left is another host, Mr. Steven Orr. Steven, how the heck are you, dog?
I am doing just fine.
Cool beans.
It's the end of December, we're rolling into Christmas. I'm not quite ready, but you know what? I don't think we have ever not still been shopping on Christmas Eve.
Yeah. I think I would have to go along with that. Now, the importance of what I am after has diminished over the years. I have learned, you know, the more major, more important things are already out of the way. Christmas Eve is the last minute stuff that I have forgotten, or the one more thing that I want to get, or something like that. So that has changed over time. No longer am I, I haven't gotten anything for my wife. Not that I ever did that. Fortunately was that smart early on. But, you know, I know other people are like, I still haven't found. It's like Christmas Eve might make that kind of tough, dog.
It's a nice thing about having kids that are grown because they understand. You know, I told them the other day, I said, they know that when it comes to our finances, that it's basically going to be the last check of the month that I'll be using to purchase Christmas presents.
Okay, they know so you'll have to put it off until,
So they know that, you know, I told them, I said, you guys will have presents to open on Christmas Day, but some of them, not all of them may be there. And so they understand that.
Right. Okay, now, something I wanted to bring up, I want to tout another comic book publisher that I'm a big fan of.
Okay.
And I understand, given when folks are listening to this, that this has been occurring for a little while, but it's still not too late to participate. 2025 is the 20th anniversary of the publisher Boom. Boom Publishing. And for their 20th anniversary, what they're doing is they are releasing a series over the year of 20 trade paperbacks that have not been collected in the way that they collect them. Most of them, I think all of them actually, are going to be hardbacks. So a lot of these trades have never been out in hardback. Some of the books have been traded before. Others are a compilation trade. Well, they would take two smaller series that maybe each had a trade, and they put both of them into one book this time. So I personally am looking forward to that because I've always been a huge Boom fan. Now, what they did is these 20 series they chose to highlight their company over the next year. Looking, there are lists that they released a list, and then of course other news sites published the list. I wasn't able to discern any where or why over the particular series that they chose. Like I say, some of them have never been traded. Some have. Some are by huge creators. One is by Stan Lee. Others are just the normal pack of creators that Boom has used. Some of them are LGBTQ authors and stories. Some of them are not. Some of them are creators of color. Some of them are not. I mean, there is no through on all of the series that they've put into trades other than they're Boom properties and they wanted to put them out in 2025. Those are the only true connections between them. So that is, I'm looking forward to that. And so some months, I mean, if you do the math, there's 12 months, but they're releasing 20 trades. So some months will have two or three books. Another thing that they're doing, all of these trades, hardcover, are $19.99.
Nice.
And I do know that looking at them, the biggest is a 12-issue trade. The smallest, I believe, is an 8-issue trade. So 8 issues and 12 issues, both will be $19.99 when that hardback comes out.
Cool.
So I think what they're doing is they're reaching into the vaults, pulling out things that they think people would be interested in, trying to make them as economical as they can, and put them out there to introduce people to some of the properties that Boom has, which, you know, over 20 years are quite a few by this point.
I'm looking through the list. I found a list. I'm looking through the list.
Okay.
I recognize Bone Parish, though I don't think I've ever read it.
Okay. Isn't that by Cullen?
Yes, that's a Colin Bunn.
Yeah. I think near the end of the year is, I think, The Traveler. That's the Stan Lee concept. I don't know that he actually wrote it, but he came up with the concept of the character, and then whoever did write it ran with it.
Yeah. But the only other one I recognize is from August, the Day Men Complete Collection. I think that's the only one off this list that I've actually read. And I really enjoyed those.
Daymen is an awesome series. James Tynan, I think, has some stuff that is not as well known as what he's doing now. I think there's a Backstagers.
Backstagers, yeah.
That's a James Tynan or Tynian or
Tynian.
I thought I knew how to say it, but now I don't. I think it's Tynian.
Yeah, because that's why his newsletter is called Tiny Onion.
Tiny Onion, yeah. I try to remember that, but I don't. It doesn't always go through in time for me to say it. And then I'm like, no, that's wrong. And it's funny because I always try to be a stickler of saying the names right.
Yeah.
And yeah. So it starts in January. I think January they drop like 2 or maybe they drop 3 in January. And then every month is a $19.99 hardcover trade or more, 1, 2, or 3 for 2025. And most of them, for one reason or another, I could recommend. A couple of them just kind of didn't work with me, but maybe they would work with other people. But all of them are very interesting reads, particularly if you want to get away from superhero fare. Even The Traveler, I don't remember being a superhero. So I don't think there are any superhero books on that list.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, well, there's something called Hero Squared.
Keith Giffen, a superhero, but that's a parody. So
right.
That is like, you know, yeah. Yeah, that was Mateus and Keith Giffen.
Yeah. So the 80s. Post-crisis Justice League team, basically.
Basically, that's what it is. The Bwahaha.
It's without Kevin Maguire.
And our podcasting associate, Chris Parton, is a huge fan of Hero Squared.
Oh, yeah?
So if anybody wants to talk about that, look up Chris and talk about it. He'll talk that series all day. Well, multiple series. And actually, that is one that even has an associated limited series that does not bear the name of the trade. Hero Squared, there were two mini series they put out, but then it branched off into a third book that had 2 issues that is supposed to be included in that trade too. So,
yeah, this says it's got, let's see, Hero Squared Extra Size Special One Shot, Hero Squared 1 through 3. Wow, that came out in 2005, so that was one of their first ones.
Right, yeah, that was early on.
Hero Squared 1 through 6 from 2006. Hero Squared Love and Death 1 through 3, and the Planetary Brigade spinoff series, Planetary Brigade 1 and 2, and Planetary Brigade Origins 1 through 3. I think I started doing Just Another Fanboy in the end of 2006, and I know there were Boom titles I was reading at the time. The only one that comes to mind, Codebreakers, which was not a superhero one. It was like a couldn't even tell you who did it, but it was you know, like government agency type stuff.
Carey Malloy and Scott Godlewski. Yeah, it was a spy book.
Cool. Boom.
Yeah.
Wow, 20 years.
A lot of good stuff. Like I say, especially if you're looking for something other than superheroes. They've got a lot of Cullen Bunn has done a lot of work there.
Yeah.
Of course, right now, probably Tynion's Something is Killing the Children. Probably is the banner comic book coming from Boom right now. I'm sure some people would argue that, but as far as the mass public, I'm sure many people have heard of that book.
Yeah, I need to get back into that one. I've read the first two, maybe three trades, four or five times. It's one of those that I remember, like, I'll use Paper Girls as an example.
Okay.
Started that series three or four times, got distracted, walked away from it, came back a couple months later, and I have one of those brains that's like, I have to start it back from the beginning. You know, I don't remember a lot of this stuff. And finally, I got around to just taking a month and just reading through all of Paper Girls and finally got it done. And I need to do that. And I did that with Invincible. That was one of those that I started multiple times. I need to do it with The Walking Dead. I've never finished The Walking Dead. And I need to do it with Something is Killing the Children, though it's not done, right? It's still...
No, yeah. It has taken breaks, and now it even has a sister book or a brother book, whichever way you want to go. And I think they might be getting ready to drop... There's at least a one-shot, and I don't know if they're going to wrap up that story in that one book or if that is the start of yet a third ongoing series set in the same universe. Talking about books, another one came to mind right now that people might know of. There's a horror anthology that's coming out called Hello Darkness. And one of the stories that started in the first issue is by some wannabe writer named Gaiman, I think is his name. He has a story in that. So
he sounds like he sucks.
Whatever. He's British or something. I don't know what he is. Australian. Who
knows? They don't have good writers coming out of Britain.
No, not since the early 80s. We brought them all over here and taught them how to write. Wow, that's going to get a lot of feedback, isn't it? Yeah, sorry about that. So, all righty, guys. Today, go ahead.
Real quick, just for reference for people who are listening to the episode, it's December as we're recording.
Yes.
But...
It is not December when these are coming out.
As you guys are listening. So, a few of these trades have already been out. And I closed down the list, so I can't tell you what's coming out. But yeah, Boom, 20 years. That's crazy. It's just...
Yep, 20. It's hard to believe. And the cool thing for me is a gentleman podcaster friend of mine, Chris Parton, and I, we were recording a show that talked about Boom Books when they celebrated their 10th anniversary.
Nice.
So we were talking about them. All the different things that they were doing to celebrate that anniversary. And it's like, oh, well, here's another anniversary. So, although this anniversary is a little different. A lot of the upper level people have left. Boom has been sold to a bigger publishing conglomerate, you could argue. So Boom's situation starting this anniversary is substantially different than when they started the 10th anniversary.
Yeah. Huh. All right. All right, let's talk some Superman.
All righty, folks. Today, we're looking at The Spy Ring of Rejeb Bey, which is the second story, third story.
Third story. Did I put the wrong thing?
Or I my eyes aren't working right. I'll blame it on my eyeballs. The third story to appear in Superman 10. This is written for us by Jerry Siegel and arted by what? Is that a word? Arted? It is now.
It is now.
Arted by Wayne Boring. Superman 10 has a cover date of May-June 1941, with an approximate sale date of March 5th, 1941, both of those pieces of information courtesy of Mike's Amazing World of Comics. So, you know when, you know where, let's see what was happening. Look, oh, damn, that was a good segue, man. Wow, okay. I'm actually getting decent at this podcasting thing, finally.
You are on fire!
Dude! 15 years, and I maybe know how to do this. Okay, here's what's happening. Lois investigates a phony astrologer who uses hypnosis to gain military secrets from officers visiting his parlor. Superman has to rescue Lois when the astrologer, Rajib Bey, tries to kill her. Undaunted, Lois returns disguised and proceeds to get hired as Rajib's assistant. Lois is found out again, but not before slipping evidence to Clark. Rajib hypnotizes Lois into retrieving the documents. Lois shoots Clark while she's in a trance. He's unharmed, of course, and learns of the plot. As Superman, Clark stops the spy's operation and brings them to the authorities. Lois is then released from her trance without memory of any of the events. So, Stephen, what'd you think?
This story goes to show how little they knew of hypnotism back then.
Okay.
The power of hypnotism, I should say. And this is the second time, the second story since the Action Comics number one, that we've come up against a villain who is a hypnotist.
Mm-hmm.
Both
and
times,
I believe they were both Eastern in origin.
Yes. Yeah. Both times the guy wore a turban.
Okay. Yeah.
And so the knowledge of hypnotism at this time is it's a Middle Eastern thing, and you can do pretty much, you can make somebody do anything you want them to
right.
do.
Right.
Just
whatever
simply
you want.
By, because in both of those stories, when somebody's being hypnotized, the guy just basically opens his eyes really wide.
Mm-hmm. Which they did a good job of showing in this story.
And then it's like, bam, they're hypnotized. You know, we don't see the pocket watch come out. You're getting sleepy.
Yep.
Count back to 10. It's just an instant bzzz, boom, you're hypnotized.
Now, unfortunately, they didn't show the little electrical bolts like you used to see
to
hypnotize somebody. And we'll go ahead and acknowledge, yes, some of the aspects of this story probably are not that they are not cool now, but they're just not cool. At the time, these are the way a lot of these things were written and the way that potentially white males at the times thought of these things. We know that it's not the case. We know that it more than likely has never been the case, but that is the way it is represented here. We have nothing to do with that. We cannot change it at this point. So,
yeah. And I never got, I mean, with the first story, and I don't remember what issue that was from. It was very early on, but that villain that was a hypnotist, he was of Middle Eastern descent.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, I didn't get the idea that this guy was. To me, he was just a white dude that put a turban on his head and could hypnotize. Despite his name, I just never got the idea that he was of Middle Eastern descent. Though the fact that they're calling him Rajid Bey, the fact that he wears a turban, the fact that there's a woman that comes in at one point that they refer to as wearing Oriental clothing, who is not Asian. She was not an Asian character.
Right.
But
his big muscular second also falls into this Middle Eastern or Asian trope kind of thing. So
wearing the big pants and the vest without the shirt on, which is like straight out of a Looney Tunes cartoon.
And we don't know per se that was his name.
Right.
That is the name that everybody used. We find out that his assistant wasn't that.
Yeah.
We found out that the female assistant, the big muscle dude, was not mute like he first came across. So what's to say that this wasn't just the dude's persona and his name was Frank from Toledo?
Yeah.
Or so, you know, I mean,
yeah,
we don't know.
I got the idea that I ended up getting by the end of the story is that the hypnotist himself and all the cronies, they're just your basic organized crime dudes that are
just grifters.
Putting on exactly.
Yeah.
And
that's all.
Before you take us through the story, I just want to point out real quick, it's kind of a teaser for the next episode. The next story in this issue, the last story in Superman number 10, is called the Deucalia Spy Ring. So I find it really weird that they have two stories in this issue dealing with spy rings, and it's the last two issues. Now, of course, these actual stories were never titled, so DC had to come up with titles after the fact. But still, the fact that we have the Spy Ring of Risha Bey, and then following it, the Dukalia Spy Ring. I don't, you know, spies must have been really big for those couple of months that they were.
Well, plus two, I mean, you consider this is the beginning towards the middle of 1941, so I'm sure that concerns of that nature are starting to ratchet up quite a bit in the general population, given what's going on in the rest of the world. So I would think that things like that will be coming up more and more for the next little while.
Yep.
All right. So once again, we have a half page panel that kind of hints at what's going to go on later on in the story, with a nice, you know, deep throated kind of radio voiced narration box here, which I won't go into because I don't want to sit here and read to everybody. But I just mention it because there have been books in the past or stories in the past where the splash page did not necessarily I think this being the third story in issue 9, I think all three of these stories, the splash page has related directly to that story. So that's cool that they're kind of catch on to that.
Yeah. And I think the last couple of Action Comics have done the same thing. So they've come up with a template here that I think is works.
With the splash pages, but the covers still don't necessarily do it. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. So even at the beginning of superhero comic books, the cover was intended to be a piece of art that grabbed your attention.
Yep.
Maybe not had anything to do with the stories other than the character, the stories inside. So with Action Comics, you could think, well, you know, it could be any one of 7, 8, 9 different characters that would get cover space because of the stories. You would hope that in Superman's own book, at least Superman would be on the cover. And they've pretty much done that. So they're sticking to part of the formula there. All right. So we have Clark and Lois, well, lost my place here, walking around for some reason. Okay, yeah, they've gone to lunch and they're coming back to the offices of the paper. And they happen to pass Rajib Bey's place. I guess it must be newer because they've never noticed it before, it seems to be.
Yeah.
And the only reason they notice it is because right outside someone is rushing away, having left the establishment, and bumps into Clark. And, you know, Clark apologizes and Dude doesn't. And the whole scene is intended, I think, to show us that Dude was in such a hurry that he even lost any modicum of decency or common respect to pay attention to apologize to any of that. But because of that now, that triggers, of course, the newspaper senses of Lois and Clark. And they're like, wonder what's wrong with it. Something's going on. Oh, look, a business we have never, ever seen before. Which they don't say that, but they certainly act that way. I mean, if it's near the paper and they go to lunch, you would think at some point they would have noticed it before, but not now. So whatever it is, it is. So later on that day, Clark is working and he starts thinking about that whole interaction, the new sign, the new business, which is interesting because even though he's sitting there thinking about it, Lois decides that she is going to check it out. So both of them are interested, but they decide to handle their interest in different ways. You know, Clark, of course, sits and ponders while he's going to write part of it or something, but he's sitting in front of his typewriter. And that's what triggers the I wonder juices. Whereas Lois is like, I wonder, as she's ringing the doorbell of the place to get in. So it's like,
It's a great Lois moment because she recognizes the guy that bumps into Clark. He's a clerk in the ordnance division of the War Department.
Interesting. She has those connections, right. But okay. Right. Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's a pretty deep connection there.
Yeah. And that's when they're like, look up to see, well, what's this place that he's walking out of? And she says to Clark, Risha Bey Astrologer, that's a strange place for a War Department employee to visit. Run along, Clark. I'm going to be busy. So she's decided right then and there, I'm going to look into this, but I'm doing it by myself. Hit the bricks, Clark.
While she's there, does she ring the doorbell? Or does she even do that? Yeah, it says she does ring the doorbell. And in answer to that, the door just opens. Kind of that, you know, spooky. It's an astrologer because of the sign. So you got to be kind of spooky and clever-handed about it. So she goes in and speaks to the gentleman that is the second of the Rajib. And he is wearing a fez. Doesn't have a propeller on top. It's just a straight fez.
Yeah.
The muscle vest with no shirt and some kind of pants. We can't really see him. So it's that tropey Arabian kind of strong man kind of outfit that he's wearing.
Yeah.
So they have Lois sit down and wait over here. And she notices that there are other people waiting. The people that she notices, the one that we can see. Okay, that's why. It's the wife of a general. So she recognizes somebody from the ordnance department. I don't know. And she knows enough about General Gerard that she recognizes his wife. So,
yeah. And I know that eventually the canon is that Lois's dad is a military guy.
Is military.
So she's like,
okay.
She grew up as a military brat, but they haven't established that at this point, but I wonder if because of stuff like this, if that's where future writers got the idea. You know, she seems to know a lot of military people. You know?
Could be. We have a chance right now to explain this by just saying this about her dad. But whatever is the case right now, she seems awful plugged into offices that maybe are above her pay grade.
Yeah,
as a reporter, so. So she's sitting here waiting, and she notices something. The narrator tells us the room seems close, right? Yeah. C-L-O-S-E is close, yeah. Not close.
Atmosphere of the room seems close. Yeah, that's weird.
Close. Okay. A wave of drowsiness creeps over the girl reporter. So she falls asleep, wakes up, immediately looks at her watch, realizes it's been 30 minutes. Checking out. You know, doing the pat down because you're in a strange place and you fell asleep. She noticed, at least that's what I do whenever I fall asleep. I make sure I still have my keys and my phone. She notices her purse has been rifled. Here, a girl in oriental costume greets Lois. That's what the narrator tells us. That's what Stephen brought up about this young lady. We find out something very interesting about her a little bit later on. This is the visual cover on what they're doing, because she is dressed as the filmy Scheherazade kind of woman with the, she's dressed. Actually, I'm sure this picture was a little edgy for early 41 comic books, the young lady.
A lot of leg.
Yep. And torso. What is that called? Décolletage? Is that what it's called? The upper chest and the...
A lot of skin.
Décolletage. Yeah, something like that. Somebody out there can correct me. She's taken to Rajib Bey, and they I like how they've started doing this. They in the same bubble, they have thought and they have vocalization. And you can tell the thought because it will be broken out somehow. Here, they're using parentheses. And it occurs several times in this story. Hasn't occurred overly often before now, but every now and then, but they really seem to use it a lot in this story. Several different people doing it. And, you know, I like that because I think it's a much more economical way to do both than to have, you know, you would have to make the panel bigger in order to get separate bubbles of all these things. So they only have so much space. So they do it both in the same action bubble and they just break it up so that you can tell. So
And normally they would, you know, if Lois was by herself, they would just have her speaking her thoughts out loud. We see that a lot in the last story, but when, you know, you got a situation like this where they're face to face, she can't say what she's thinking out loud because obviously he'd hear her. So I agree. I like how they do it this way. I know that the first time we ran across it, I was really confused by what was going on, but you pick it up real quick. You know, it's not that hard to figure out what's going on.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
Hello there. Come on in and welcome to the Fantastic Four. I am your host, Brett Young, and this is the podcast serving up comics, cocktails, and conversation for your listening pleasure. Every episode, I'll welcome a guest to the Fantastic Lounge to explore one of their favorite comic book characters and cover a classic story in which they're featured. And what pairs better with great literature than a delicious drink? Based on my guest's ingredient of choice, we'll mix up a cocktail or mocktail to enjoy in the Fantastic Lounge while we talk comics, mixology, history, and whatever else comes to mind. So join me every month for the Fantastic Pour, open for business by the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Earth-shattering disasters, strange sports stories, five-star superhero spectacular. What do all these titles have in common? Well, they're all Bronze Age DC Comics, of course, but they are all also special. My name is Paul Kien, and I'm the host of the new podcast, DC Specialcast. In the 1970s, DC Comics published a number of catch-all titles, like DC Special, DC Special Series, DC Superstars, and others. These comics varied wildly in content, quality, and even format. Each episode, I will be joined by a guest to explore one of these special comics. So join me for DC Specialcast, coming in 2025, only on the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
And now back to the Superman Super Show.
Yeah, after you see it a couple times, you're like, okay, now I see what they're doing. Because, yeah, like you said, it's obvious that you can't say A because then they would hear it. So, So they interact, Lois and Rajib Bey. Lois puts on an act. She's a lot more with it than, I don't necessarily know why she felt that she had to really try to be gullible, but that's what she's doing. She's playing dumb, let's say.
Yeah, especially since she does, you know, she doesn't do it for very long.
No.
You know, it's during this first interaction that after, you know, he says a couple things that she plays along and then ends up going, all right, enough of this crap, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, why was this ordnance division dude here? Which is right. Like, yeah, okay, that's going to get you an answer. Okay. Yeah, it's like, just confront them directly and they'll just fess up right away and you'll be like, yeah.
And what's funny about that is back to that first page when, you know, Lois decides she's going to look into this. She makes Clark leave. She didn't want Clark along. And we see Clark in the office. He's speaking his thoughts out loud because he's alone and he has this hunch that Lois is, as he puts it, Lois is about to engage in her favorite sport, getting into trouble.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what she does here because Lois, it's the thing I love about Lois is that she's not afraid to sit there in front of two obvious bad guys and just, you know, she's by herself, but she's not afraid to go, look, I know you guys are doing criminal activities and I'm going to tell the world, you know, and just doesn't assume that, especially after the multiple times she's done this in the past has been kidnapped. She just keeps doing it. She just doesn't care.
Here, we find out that the big tough guy's name is Raj, or at least that's what he's referred to. R-A-J. I assume that's how it's pronounced. Raj. So Rajib Bey tells Raj to escort the young lady, you know where. She knows too much. She's asking too many questions. So Raj takes her to, I guess, just another room here. And here's a couple other thugs that are just waiting, I guess, to be used. I don't know, just soldiers in the army here. The three of them dump Lois in a laundry basket, which to me it looks like a trunk or
like a
metal
big box.
Yeah, but they say. Lois, or the narrator tells us, Lois is forced within a laundry basket. Soiled clothing is tossed upon her bound figure. that just brought nasty images to my mind.
I mean, it's the word soil.
Yeah. It's like,
it's one thing to say that dirty clothes.
Dirty laundry, yeah, okay.
Yeah, but you use the term soiled. Soiled, and it just opens up a lot of connotations that...
Oh, poor Lois.
Yeah, you immediately start kind of holding back the vomit, you know?
Yeah.
We also learn here that Rajib Bey is not the brains of this operation.
Right. He has a boss that he reports to. Because he had to clear getting rid of Lois.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he can't make that decision himself.
Asking questions about Greg. Yeah, so no indication who the boss is, name or anything, just that there is one. So they dump her in the laundry basket. Yeah. And dump her in a van and take off. They're going to do something with the dirty laundry, I guess. Ching. Yeah, I don't know. Now, somewhere from the time we saw Clark thinking in his office to the time when Lois is dumped in the basket, Clark changes to Superman, because at the time that the van takes off from the building, Superman is on top of probably the Daily Planet or whatever the name of the paper is right now. I don't think it's Daily Planet yet, is it?
No, yeah, it's the Daily Planet.
Okay. So he's on top scouting because he knows something is off, and he sees the van leave. Using his X-ray vision, he sees in the van, in the trunk, at the bottom of the seat. No, in the trunk is Lois. So obviously now he knows something is up. He follows the van. Before they get too far towards their destination, he does, for the second story in a row, the grab the back bumper, swing under to catch a ride trick on a vehicle. For those of you that haven't listened to the previous episode, he did this with a car that he was wanting to see where the gentleman was going. I don't think that he knew. So this one he was trailing, wanted to know where they were going. This one, it's a little different because he does know that ultimately he wants to get Lois out of the car. So he's wanting to find out where they're going, but he doesn't really give them time, because he rescues Lois before they can get to their ultimate destination, which may have given him some sort of clue as to what was going on, and then he could still rescue Lois. So I think he kind of jumped the gun here a little bit.
It's really kind of awesome, because he grabs the back bumper, he swings under the car, and then snaps the drive shaft and the brake rods.
And the brakes, yeah.
And then swings himself back up to the back of the truck, rips the back door off of it, grabs her out, and then jumps out the back of it.
Of course, the out-of-control vehicle careens off the nice ocean mountain. No, I guess it's not oceany. I don't know why I thought it was oceany, but the kind of mountain road that they're traveling on, and careens off the side. Superman carries Lois's trunk back to the top of the Daily Planet. The two drivers make their way back to, or the two soldiers make their way back to Rajib Bey to let him know, we wrecked the car, but Lois is dead. So it's yes. Kind of a good news, bad news kind of situation. They're going to relay to their boss. Top of the Daily Planet, Superman lets Lois go. He runs off, changes back to Clark. With what happened at Rajib Bey's place, Lois, once she is freed, goes to police headquarters and talks to our friend, Captain Casey, Sergeant Casey.
I don't remember. They just call him Casey in this one.
Yeah, I forget what his rank is, but it's Officer Casey.
Yeah.
Maybe early on we saw him like once, but then here recently in the last 6 to 8 stories, he is Lois and Clark's police contact. They have just stuck with him, whatever rank Casey, Officer Casey. So he has become now a recurring, other than Perry, maybe the only other recurring character than Lois and Clark. So
yeah, I think so, yeah.
So she talks to Casey. She says, I don't think she necessarily justifies it. She just says she wants to look through the rogues gallery. Boy, that's an old-timey word for it. And so basically she wants to look at all the photographs of all the criminals or people that have been suspected of criminal behavior in the city. Ultimately, she runs through and she sees a picture of the female assistant, finds out her name is Mary Grogan, which is, you know, has nothing to do with Oriental Middle Eastern. At least I don't think. I think that's a very American Caucasian name.
Yeah.
And she is dressed as an Oriental female playing in an Eastern or Middle Eastern scam here. So we're starting to see maybe, well, definitely things aren't necessarily what we believe, even in as far as the folks themselves maybe are playing parts they're not from anywhere other than, like I say, Toledo. Not that I'm trying to bash on Toledo. I have nothing against Toledo.
And I like how in that moment, as she's looking at the pictures, we get a thought bubble so that, you know, she's obviously not speaking her thoughts out loud because Casey's in the room with her.
Right.
But they're not mixing the thought with her speaking out loud.
Right.
They go ahead and give her a thought bubble, which is the cloud with the little, you know, instead of the tail, it's the little dots.
Dots. Mm-hmm.
And yet they still put the text in the parentheses,
with
the quotes and everything around it. So just so you know, it's like, because the word bubbles are still quite cloud-like. They still have a cloud-like quality about them. This is a more cloudy, I guess you could say, but
poofier or,
it's, and then with the dots leading to the head, for those of us that are used to the modern thought bubble, that's what we're used to seeing. But at the time, it's like they wanted to make sure people knew that she wasn't talking out loud. So they stuck with the same format as far as the parentheses and quotes and all that junk as well.
And I've never looked it up, but I think because of this next scene, this book probably should be a key in Superman.
Yeah, I agree.
We see Lois's mother for the very first time. Now, we see her again, camera over the shoulder, like we've been seeing Perry, but eventually they change that. So we can only hope that they eventually change and we get to see a full view of Lois's mother.
And, she's one panel, and there's seems to be one specific reason that her mom is in this issue, and it just seems silly to me that they did it. But because what is she doing? What is she doing for her mom?
She's putting on a disguise, and she wants to check her disguise with her mom.
Yeah. So if her mom doesn't recognize her, then obviously nobody else will.
Right.
They introduce her mother just for that.
Just for that one thing, yeah. But we do know, now I would assume that must mean that her mother lives in Metropolis because she wouldn't have traveled halfway across the country to check this. So mom must live close to wherever Lois is, which then is close to where Lois is going wearing this getup because if it were a long way away, it would mess it up. So all of this must be in close proximity to each other.
Yeah. And because it's just that one panel and because they tell us that we are in Lois's apartment, I got the idea that her mom lives with her.
Or at the very least, got to live in the building.
Yeah.
And she called her mom, hey, can you come up here for a minute, down here for a minute? And so it's like they live real close together.
And of course, her disguise is literally just a different set of clothes.
Yeah,
she didn't even put on glasses.
It's a black, which we know would be the key. That works that, completely.
That's the infallible disguise. But yeah, she just put on different clothes.
I was reading, what was I reading? Probably, I think it was a Spider-Man book the other night, and somebody made mention of wanting to disguise themselves, but unfortunately, they didn't have any Clark Kent glasses on them, so...
Was it 90s? Was it a Todd McFarlane? Because I feel like I ran across that recently.
He might have done it, but no, it's a contemporary Spider-Man.
Okay. Yeah.
Now Lois goes back to Rajib Bey's office, the business, the astrology business, and talks to Miss Grogan, or the Oriental, And that's an assumption. It said she was wearing Oriental garb. It didn't say that the individual was Oriental, although in my defense, the very first panel on this page, I think she is drawn with an attempt at Oriental features, but the subsequent panels where she shows, perhaps not. So I don't know, maybe just a difference in art, or I don't know what happened, but
Well, I was just going to say, of course, we're using the word Oriental only because they did in the issue.
Yes.
That was the preferred word back then.
It goes to this whole kind of side issue that all of these individuals are trying to be something they're not. And my contention is not only are they not that, but they are North American, Caucasian. I mean, they are absolutely not that, as opposed to some sort of plant individual from that region of the world who is just a bad guy over here. I think they're not even anywhere near what they are portraying. All of it is play acting.
Yeah. And I like to imagine that because they, you know, we see a lot of their lackeys just in suits. So they're obviously, you like organized crime, gangsters.
Right.
So I like to imagine that even Rajad Bey, they've got like this thick New Jersey accent while they're trying to portray this whole Arabian Nights thing. But they're like, hey, let me tell you future over here.
They're actually from New England, and they're not even disguising their New England accent, but they're coming out in a turban. And So Lois goes back to the young lady she saw. Tells her, hey, I know you're this Miss Grogan. I know what you're wanted for. I think I know what you're doing. And the woman's like, oh, okay, well, you got me. What do you want? And she says, well, I need you to do me a favor she doesn't say. She threatens the woman.
Yeah.
She says, basically, you do this for me or I will tell everybody that you're here. And so the girl asks, well, what do you want? And basically, Lois just said, hey, you know, why don't you go on a vacation and introduce me to your boss and tell him I'm a good replacement while you're on vacation. So that happens. And of course, Rajib is like, I don't know you from Adam. Why should I? And the girl is like, oh, no. We were in the joint together. So we're two bad guys that served at the same time. So, of course, you can trust her. And I'm like, wait, that is the absolute reason to not trust them, because if you're just as crooked as she is, what among thieves, honor among thieves. It's like, so, you know, if you did time, that means because I trust A, I can trust B.
Yeah, that means you're aces.
Yeah. So that's all the proof that there is.
Right. that's all they need.
She served with me in prison. And he's like, oh, okay, yeah, you got the job.
That's all he needs. And they weird, this writing trope here where kind of like on a TV show when somebody is on the phone and you can't hear the other side of the conversation. So the person on screen is kind of repeating what the person on the... So rather than... Because Lois tells the woman, all right, just resign from your job, give it to me, and I won't turn you in. And so the very next panel, Lois and the woman are there with Rajid Bey, and he is saying, what's that, Mary? You're leaving the city for a while and want this girl to take your place while you're gone? There's no reason at this point not to have her say, hey, boss, I'm leaving for a while. I want her to take my place.
Yeah. Why have him say that?
Yeah. It's a weird, because they're not saving space. They're not saving time. I don't know. I thought that was kind of a weird.
Yeah. That is kind of weird. I don't know why. Yeah. It's like, and she's in the scene.
Yeah.
I mean, they drew her. So it's like, well, if she's there, why not just have her say that instead?
Yeah. Maybe the position of the word bubbles, maybe that. I don't know. That kind of threw them off because they would have had to stack some word bubbles there.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, because all three of them talk.
Yeah.
So I guess rather than having Mary talk twice and maybe confuse things. They had him talk and her talk. So she does. Mary takes off and Lois starts scoping things out. She wants to get more information on Rajib. So she's looking around. She finds a locked file cabinet. It is locked, but she picks it and she finds some information about important or prominent government officials. So she takes it. It's like, oh, well, this is the proof I'm after. So she keeps it. We see Clark ringing the doorbell to get in, and he is thinking Bubbles, Dot's thinking, but his thoughts are in parentheses also. So this whole thing they have decided is how they're going to relay thought as opposed to vocal, is do all of this. Eventually, it gets shortened, like Stephen was saying, until the bubbles are a little different. And then the connection between the individual and the bubble really tells us what it is. If the art is drawn, or not the art, I guess maybe that's the letterer. I don't know who draws the bubble, but if the bubble is drawn correctly. Now, I will say, on occasion, I have seen that there is no difference in the kind of bubble, and you have to kind of figure out which it is. I mean, if you even care to know for sure. A lot of times it doesn't matter per se if it's thought or spoken. It's just an info dump for the reader. And, you know, it's like, well, it doesn't matter.
And I love that Clark, because he's there because he's been looking for Lois. He knows that she's obviously going to do something to get herself in trouble. And so he's checking there because he can't find her anywhere else. And he just assumes that she's a prisoner. She's gotten herself kidnapped. That's where Lois and Clark are at this point, is that Clark is just like resigned himself to the fact that Lois has been kidnapped. That's just,
if I can't quickly find her, she's into something that she's into some kind of trouble. And because the last we knew, he left her on the roof of the Daily Planet there in a laundry basket.
Well,
she was climbing out when we saw her. But that was the last place. So it's like... It's kind of a stretch to assume that she is doing anything. It's like, well, the last time I saw her, you had been kidnapped and you had been rescued and released. And so if I can't find you, I know you must be into trouble.
He knows her too well. He's
like, wow.
She's not just going to give a silly kidnapping and attempted murder is not going to get her to stop.
Right. No. She hasn't succumbed to the vapors because of what happened earlier in the day and has passed out. At her apartment, which we know she went to, you know, it's like, no, I don't know where she is. So she must be in trouble. I've got to find her. It's kind of like whenever, you know, Lassie comes running up barking, you know, there's trouble because that's the only time they have Lassie do that. So, so she is there. Clark comes in. I guess he's just given entry by somebody and decides to... Somehow, she is inside, he is outside. Then they are in the same room together. There's one panel in between that, but it's just of Lois. So it's like, so somehow, she was in there searching around. She found some stuff. Then we cut to Clark, and he's wanting to get into the building, so he's ringing the doorbell, thinking something. We see Lois. She heard the doorbell, so she knows, I need to stop what I'm doing. Somebody's about to come in. And I guess maybe she is the one because she is the greeter, but Raj has been the greeter up to now, not the female companion. So
he must be at lunch.
Yeah, maybe Raj went on vacation with the Mary. Maybe they're a couple and
maybe.
They both went. I'll have to watch and see if we see Raj again. But
he does come back. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So she must let Clark in, and They're a little, I guess Clark doesn't recognize her, does he?
No, he sees right through her disguise.
Yeah, she's got a really good disguise on. And she treats him like another customer.
Yeah. He pretends to not recognize her, but he says.
Oh, but he does recognize this disguise. Why not just,
I don't know.
To move the story. Okay. So she goes and tells Rajib Bey that somebody is here to see him, and it's the Daily Planet reporter named Clark Kent. I can tell you plenty about it because if he's going to do a reading, he's got to have information. Well, Lois knows, which would be suspicious to me because it's like, if you're just a, you know, a street hustler that did time with Mary, how do you know anything about this high profile news reporter that's doing all these Superman stories?
So is that prison connections?
Yeah, I don't know. So they confront each other, Rajib and Clark. Rajib immediately drops that, I know you're Clark Kent. So it's an adversarial conversation from the get-go here. But he plays it off, Rajib does. And Clark plays that he's genuinely there for a reading. He's there as Clark Kent, but not Clark Kent the reporter. He's there as Clark Kent dude that is having girl problems.
Yeah.
And he presents his genuine problem to Rajib about the fact that he likes somebody and she keeps blowing him off and won't give him the time of day and whatever. What do I need to do to gain her interest?
And he's doing that because he knows that Lois is listening. He thinks it's funny.
Well, and perhaps he is also telling her something, I think, that he doesn't think she knows, which it could be. She hasn't thought about it like that because he's always irritating her, so she's never thought beyond that. But she hears him, and she apparently doesn't make the connection that he's talking about her. Nope. It must be another girl. So
she just thinks he's a loser.
Yeah, talking about his personal problems. What a loser.
Yeah.
Which is like, isn't that what everybody does with the... I mean, that's what people are coming there for.
Yeah.
So Rajib tries to give Clark some advice, or doesn't try. He gives Clark some advice, which all of us out here reading this were like, duh. You know, with what Clark says, with what Rajib says, it's like, well, yeah, everybody knows that. You're not, you know, there are no secrets there. It's, yeah. As he's leaving, though, he hands Lois money for the reading. And in the interaction, she gives Clark the papers that she stole from the cabinet. And he is so chill about it that he doesn't necessarily pay attention to what is happening. He immediately plays along. Here's this woman that he doesn't know that has just given him some papers in some astrologer's office that he is suspicious about to begin with.
He knows it's Lois.
Oh, no, that's right. Yeah, he recognized Lois. So, yeah, so he does realize she is trying to pass something.
Yeah.
Yeah, she just doesn't know that he knows that she knows. Yeah.
But he's not dumb enough to go, what? What's this? What did you give me?
Well, see, that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Papers? Did you give? Should I look at these right now?
Yeah, really. So now, as Clark's leaving for the second time in the vicinity of this astrologer's place, he physically bumps into someone else. So,
right.
So people who deal with astrologers are just brash, unrefined kind of people. They just knock into people all the time. So this dude. Let's see. I don't see him using his name here. There's a lot of words here coming up. One of these panels is like 75-80% word bubble. It's Claremontian in proportions.
I don't think they give this guy a name. They just describe him as a heavyset, beetle-browed man, whatever that means.
Is this the boss?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Don't think so? Okay, he's just another lackey?
Let's just take a moment and scan through their...
Well, he questions this new girl, being, you know, that Lois is playing the part of, and then he asks for the information that Rajib has gotten previously War Department dude. I bet he's the boss.
Yeah, he might be the boss. They don't come out and say it, but it sounds like
Rajib called on the phone to clear what to do with Lois because, he's basically, as the thief, the things that he has stolen, which is information, he is giving to this person. And I can't imagine you would just do that to somebody else in the mob. They have to have some kind of weight, or you wouldn't give them your booty that you have gotten for...
Yeah, for and your... there is a moment here because Lois is eavesdropping as
there's Raj.
They're talking. Raj grabs her, and we find out that he can speak when he says, "Caught the new girl snooping, boss," which I at first assumed he was directing that toward Rajib Bey.
Rajib.
But he's kind of handing her to the other guy, so.
So it could be, boss could be him.
Yeah.
So now Lois is definitely in trouble. She's caught.
Again.
Yeah. So now the gentleman that came in, who is dressed all in green with a nifty little green derby on, starts checking around, and he's like, "Oh, hey, wait a minute. You know, there's some papers here that should be here that are missing. I bet she had something to do with it." She says, "Well, I don't have them." And Rajib is like, "Well, that's okay. You can say whatever you want. I'll get the truth out of you."
And there's something because, all right, so she's got this disguise on, right, that not even her mother can recognize her.
Right.
Clark recognizes her right away, but her mother doesn't. And nobody else seems to recognize her. But the moment that Raj shows up, grabs her, hands her over to the boss, for some reason, nothing about her has changed. Except for maybe, no, that little hat thing. She's still wearing that. Nothing about her has changed. And yet, Rajib Bey immediately, oh, right. She's got a disguise on. That's Lois Lane.
Now he recognizes
her. That didn't make any sense.
So, Lois Lane, missing papers, something's up. He does the whammy with, here, though, you talked about the big, here he doesn't have the big eyes. He does the other thing, which is the squint and concentrate. Yeah. And I said there were no, like, electrical bolts, but there is kind of a thing pass, you know, the I'm watching you kind of drawing here. And she's hypnotized. That's it. She tells him whatever he wants to know. "What did you do with the papers?" "I gave them to the reporter, Clark Kent." Logan Misiak? And Logan, I apologize if I've mispronounced that, said, "When Superman is done right, he's the greatest superhero, period." Can't necessarily argue with that. I mean, he is.
I can agree with that. I think the depends on what each of us consider is Superman done right.
Well, Superman started most of it. He didn't necessarily, I don't think, start it all. I think you could argue, but he started most of it. So.
Yeah.
If he is the progenitor of most superheroes, then yeah, you know, chances are anything that we think of as what a superhero does, chances are Superman did it first, you know, way back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, whatever we're looking for. But he is the blank man in the room, smartest, strongest, best looking, you know, whatever you need him to be. So, yeah, it's hard to argue that for sure.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
Beginning at the ripe old age of 4 years old, seeing Star Wars for the first time, I became obsessed with the movies. What they were, what they did, what they meant. I turned that obsession into a career, climbing the filmmaking and storytelling ranks as a screenwriter, author, and television maker. Now, I'm taking you on a journey through the cinema that defined my generation, Generation X, in the Celluloid Heroes podcast. Examining the landmark films of the era from the well-known to the obscure to the unexpected, charting a history of cinema growth over the past 50 years, and looking forward to where it's going next. Celluloid Heroes is part memoir, part film analysis, and part exploration of the last 50 years of cinema through a Gen X lens. From the suburban adventures of Star Wars and E.T. the Extraterrestrial to the Reagan-era cinema of The Right Stuff and Red Dawn, the sunny nostalgia that isn't of Back to the Future and Stand By Me, the year Generation X broke big with Reservoir Dogs and Dazed and Confused, the cautionary Los Angeles-centered tales of L.A. Confidential and The Limey, the last great golden age of blockbuster filmmaking with The Fellowship of the Ring and Pirates of the Caribbean, and concluding with the mournful ruminations of Inside Llewyn Davis and The Irishman. Celluloid Heroes will take a deep look at the themes, makers, and cultural context of this diverse array of films, and try to determine just what makes them so special to filmgoers filmmakers, and to this fan in particular, as I chart a life through the movies that inspired me. It's also something of an autobiography of this young film fan who became a filmmaker himself, charting the good, the bad, and the ugly of a life in the creative arts with all of its triumphant moments and bitter defeats along the way. My name is Brad Abraham, and I welcome you to the Celluloid Heroes podcast, a proud member of the Long Box Crusade podcast network. Catch us monthly, and I'll see you there.
And now, back to the Superman Super Show.
So they gave Lois the whammy. She told him that Clark had been there. She gave the paper she stole to Clark. Next thing we see is her leaving. Shortly after, Lois departs from Rajib Bey's establishment alone, it tells us. And the narration kind of did something with the with the type there, so it to highlight the word alone. So we see a panel of her walking, and then another narration panel. Arriving at the Daily Planet, she seeks out Clark, and we see her confronting Clark. I believe a girl at Rajib Bey's place gave you some papers. They're for me. So she gave them to Clark, and now she's going back to reclaim them. When she gave them to Clark, she wasn't her, right? She was in disguise. But now that she wants them, it is her. She's not in disguise.
It's like she's still trying to play up the fact that the girl wasn't her.
Yeah, right. And Clark doesn't know this.
Yeah.
Wait here, I'll get them, Clark says. And then we see that, that's pretty straightforward. She just comes in and says, hey, I think somebody gave you something that is supposed to be for me. And he's like, oh, yeah, I think they did. Hang on. Now, though, as he's getting the papers, he's thinking, these papers indicate that Rajib Bey is involved in a great spy ring. I wonder what she's going to do with. She's going to write an article, Clark.
Yeah.
Why is that suspicious? You were given some kind of secondhand information. It's like, isn't that what you guys do? Now, this is funny for a couple reasons. Here you are, he's handing the papers over. Well, as he's handing the papers over, apparently Lois carries a sidearm in her purse, or at least she was given one by Rajib Bey, because she pulls it out and she shoots Clark, okay? My only assumption can be that she must have been told to get the papers and kill Clark, because she doesn't shoot him in the leg or shoulder. She doesn't gut shoot him.
Nope.
She shoots him in the face.
In the face. That's hardcore.
From less than 6 feet away.
Yeah.
She would never have forgotten this for the rest of her life if she had actually accomplished this.
Right.
I don't care if she's hypnotized or not. You know, I would think the vision of someone's skull exploding before your eyes would be something that would leave a mark.
Yes.
But fortunately, of course, it's Superman and it just bounces right off. And they show it. I like the panel. It's a nice headshot, and it shows the bullet coming into his face and then ricocheting off it. And he is surprised. Can she have guessed I'm Superman and this is a test of the imperviousness of my skin? Really, Clark? I mean, that's okay. No. Glazed look in her eyes. She's hypnotized. Rajib Bey sent her here in a trance to kill me. And the narrator tells us the bullet ricochets off Clark's skin, leaving him unharmed. But, okay, first of all, let's take this apart a little bit. I understand that Lois is hypnotized, but the results of the hypnotism are so strong that she was able to take a gun and shoot this man that she has spent most all days with for several years now in the face to get these papers. I mean, without hesitation, it's just, yes, this is what I'll do with you. Now, on the other hand, we have Clark that's like, oh, look, she just must be playing. That's why she shot me in the face. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe she's not. It's like, dog. I mean, if someone is going to shoot you in the head, I would say they are serious from beginning to end. Yeah. There's no other possibility. It's not accidental that somebody pulls out a handgun out of their purse and aims it at your head and pulls the trigger. That is not, there's no, oh, well, maybe they meant, no, they meant exactly what happened. So.
Which speaks to their, what they thought hypnotism was back then, that You could literally the only way you could hypnotize someone into shooting someone else in the face is if that person already wanted to shoot that person in the face.
But it would take much more than hypnotism.
Right.
It would take a whole different kind of programming.
Exactly.
Just hypnotism isn't.
Exactly. Yeah. But yet here, all he does is, bzz, you know, stare into her eyes and, giving her just. And Lois Clark's reaction is, let's say for a second that it really was Lois is not hypnotized. She's decided that she thinks that Clark is Superman. The fact that she would test her theory by shooting him point blank in the face. I mean, if I was Clark at that point, I'd be like, all right, bitch, be crazy.
No doubt. You know? We are done. Yeah. This is it.
And then the narration box, the fact that they have to, that the writers felt that they have to tell us. We know he's Superman. As the reader, we know that bullets bounce off his skin. We can see the bullet bouncing off his skin. And yet they have to double down and tell us, oh, by the way, the bullet bounced off his skin.
Tell us what we saw.
Yeah.
It's like, I know what I saw.
Yeah.
I want to add to, I like what they've been doing with the narration in that the narration is having its own panels.
Yeah.
I like the way that looks and I like the way it feels. Nowadays, narration will be in a box or it'll be a mini box that's part of the panel. But here, the narration is its own panel. Solid colored text inside. I like the feel of that as we're going through.
Yeah.
So Clark goes up to Lois after he has, disarmed her. I don't know what's happened in the interim. We don't see. But he acts as though he is the one that has hypnotized Lois because he asks her what is going on and she willingly tells him. So, I mean, all of a sudden, he is the one in control of the effects of the hypnotism, not the person who actually did it, because I would think only they could elicit the truth from someone that they hypnotized, not someone else, because, so the command structure, I think, is off here.
Well, I know that at some point, the idea behind Superman's powers, and I don't know if it is ends up being a Golden Age thing or a Silver Age thing, is that everything about every attribute about Superman is super. So I think there's even an episode of Seinfeld where Jerry, they make a joke out of it where, everything, you know, he's super strong. He's super fast. So his mental ability is super as well. And so, because they use the words that he probes her mind,
probes her mind.
And the joke on the episode of Seinfeld is that because, Jerry and George get kind of into a quick argument about Superman's sense of humor. And Jerry's idea is that, well, everything else is about him is supers. He should have a super sense of humor. And George says, I've never heard him say anything funny.
I think Superman probably has a very good sense of humor.
I never heard him say anything really funny.
But it's common sense. He's got super strength, super speed. I'm sure he's got super humor.
I think that, but either you're born with a sense of humor or you're not. It's not going to change. Even if you go from the red sun of Krypton all the way to the yellow sun of the Earth.
Why? Why would that one area of his mind not be affected by the yellow sun of the Earth?
I don't know, but he ain't funny.
But
that's not true. He says funny stuff all the time.
Yeah, I just got to read some of these Golden Age stories. But I read this as Superman has his own super mental abilities that we just haven't really seen yet.
Okay.
And so he's able to probe into her mind and take over. Like it's something that you can just take over from somebody.
You take control of this effect. Yeah. And for those of you that are watching, this is Aubrey that has decided that she is now interested in what I'm doing.
Is her tail bent or does she have a really short tail?
No, she has a bobtail.
Oh, okay.
She was born that way. It's about, for her body size, it's probably about a quarter of what it should be.
All right.
Never affected her, though. I mean, she hops and runs around just fine and everything. Whereas, it's interesting you should mention that because her brother has probably the longest tail I have ever seen, but he is also by weight one of the biggest cats I have ever seen. So I guess that's the way that works.
Are they from the same litter?
Yes, yes.
So it's like the took what was hers right. and gave it to him.
he got part of her tail. She was just left with a little bit. Yeah.
That's funny.
So he asks Lois, what's going on? And she says, a new bombing mechanism. Carter, Rajib Bey, their men are about to raid the safe of the Ordnance Department for its plans. So now the story has come full circle. She said that she recognized the dude that initially bumped into Clark in the, third panel of the story, worked in the Ordnance Department. So now we see that Rajib Carter. Is Carter that dude's name?
I guess he's the dude in the green hat.
Yeah, that must be Carter. Okay. So, but they are not the ones that are at the Ordnance Department. Maybe the guys at the Ordnance Department are the two soldiers that put her in the laundry basket and were driving her off somewhere. But we cut there and we're told that the bad guys are wearing, they're wearing not just gas masks, but, well, their hands aren't covered, but they're, it almost looks like they're in some sort of protective gear, but just the suit. They have suits and ties on, but their head is completely covered by what they're calling a gas mask. It's not just a mask.
Yeah.
So they're there, and one of them is holding, to me, it looks like the thing that you use to smoke bees with. You light a fire in it, and you puff out the smoke, and it looks like that. Now, I have also seen, at some point, blow torches were designed with the same sort of design. But to me, when I see this, it's the beekeeper's smoke gun that they anesthetize or dull bees with is what it looks like.
That's exactly what I thought it was.
Okay. Now, having said that, it is a gas gun of some sort. Now, I automatically think back to in DC in the Golden Age is was it Sandman? It wasn't. What was it, Sandman that ran around gassing people on, putting them to sleep? Close to the same time. He might not have started yet, but that gas gun looked completely different than this. His looked more like just a pistol.
Right.
Whereas this looks like some sort of industrial thing. So they've gassed the people in the office here. We cut to Superman, who is running to the rescue. Literally, he's in the sky, but it looks like he's running. And now he's diving towards the War Department building in Washington, D.C., I presume is where the War Department would be.
And I mean, that almost looks like the Washington Monument maybe in the background.
And maybe that's what they're telling us, is that this is D.C. that he's in because the Washington Monument is there. He breaks through. I don't know that he breaks through. He gets through a big steel bolted door. Apparently, it wasn't shut because he doesn't destroy it or anything. Goes in, tells us the guards overcome by gas. Fortunately, the gas has no effect on me. It looks as though I've come not a minute too soon. He runs up on one of the soldiers. They recognize him. Now, this I went into a long thing last episode about this. Recognizing, not recognizing this individual by this point. Here is a bad guy. He is a bad guy that is not even in the same city that Superman is in. Now, he may be from the same city. We don't know. But right now, I would presume that he's not from Metropolis. Okay. But he recognizes Superman. If they're in DC, then this is a DC thug that has been hired. And he recognizes Superman from whatever city's away that Superman didn't get to DC very often. Although here before too long, he probably will start showing up in DC more often because of world events. But needless to say, the dude recognizes him, calls him by name, Superman. See, says, keep back or you'll regret it. If anyone around here is going to regret anything Superman says, it's going to be you. And the bad guy says, I warned you. And he tries to gas him. Now, it looks like gas to me. the guards in this building have been gassed. They've been knocked out by gas. The narrator tells us the man of tomorrow grips the metal blowtorch then.
Yeah.
And we see him crushing it. So I don't know. Like I said, I have seen blowtorches that were designed with this shape. And I've seen them used before in maybe comic books. I don't know if I've ever seen one in real life shaped like this. But so
yeah,
everything is gassing except when the narrator tells us that Superman has it and he's calling it a blowtorch.
Yeah.
So Superman disarms him, crushes the weapon. Now, that's not enough. You know, they have these suits. They manage to get close enough to the building with their gas gun to gas the people inside. Nobody has said anything. There's no backups to anything. The War Department building, okay, kind of an important place right now in Washington, D.C. These dudes break in. They manage to gas people. Superman defeats the gas gun, but either one of them or someone else has a machine gun and tries to take out Superman. So two or more of these very interestingly dressed people have gotten close enough with gas guns and machine guns to break into the War Department building at the, not our involvement, but during World War II. So I would presume that things were maybe a little bit heightened right now as far as security and keeping your eyes open and everything, but not here today. No. So, of course, Superman survives the machine gun assault. He grabs the guys and throws them aside, goes over to the safe, rips the door off the safe, So he rips the door off the safe. Then he goes and gets the bad guys, takes their mask off, exposing them to the gas. But then he throws them in the safe and closes the door behind them, kind of locking them in the safe. So I guess their brief exposure to the gas was enough to knock them out too. But then he didn't leave them unconscious. He threw them in the safe and locked the safe back up so they couldn't get away. He triggers a burglar alarm, knowing that the police will come, streaks back to Metropolis, I presume, is where Raj is. He busts past Raj to talk to Rajib Bey, and now who I'm going to call Carter. It's the only other name that's been given, and this is the only other person that we have seen. So I think it's pretty easy to presume that this is Carter.
Yeah.
So he confronts the two of them, Superman does. Now here, Rajib tries to whammy Superman with the big eyes. His eyes get real, and he's drawn that way. Before he squinted at Lois, I guess because he needed just a little bit of the juice to get her. Yeah. Here, they don't say anything about recognizing him as Superman. So other than maybe the difference between male and female, he decides that he needs more juice because he's dealing with a male. So he opens his eyes up, lets the full juice come out instead of just a little juice with the squinted eyes. Big eyes, stand still, don't move. And Superman kind of goes rigid messing with him. And then he's like, oh, no, I'm kidding. And he runs up and grabs him. It didn't affect him at all. He played him. I don't know why. I guess to increase the tension for us readers. It's like, oh no, did it work?
Yeah.
So he grabs the two of them, flies off with them, jumps away with them to take them to the police department.
He's flying.
Along the way, he's telling them, okay, now, you're going to confess or I'm going to drop you. And by the time they get to where they're going, they have agreed. As soon as you put us down, we'll confess, because he hands them over to the police and Superman tells the police, they'll explain to you why they deserve arrest. And if they don't, I'll be back. So he pulls the Arnold on him. I'll be back.
Yeah.
Last panel is the, between Lois and Clark and submitting an article to the paper and who gets the credit and everything like that. Snoozing on the job, eh? While I got a scoop. Read all about it in the Planet. So apparently Clark turned this one in.
Yeah.
And Lois is back in the outfit that she left her mom in, not the Oriental coat girl from Rajib's. So she went home and changed. Yeah, and
after she was hypnotized, because she's in the Oriental garb, she's hypnotized. But then when she enters the Daily Planet and shoots Clark in the face, she's back in her regular clothes.
Oh, was she wearing this already? Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's like, as part of her hypnosis, they had her dress back up.
She reverted, like Superman does. She had two outfits. Yeah. So
there's a couple of moments that I wanted to point out real quick that I just cracked up over. If we go back to page 3, after Lois is thrown into the laundry basket with the soiled laundry, and it's the bottom corner panel with the laundry truck. So they're driving off with her, and the one driver says, "Where shall we dump her? In the river or the lake?" And the other guy says, "Maybe at the lake. We've been using the river too much lately. It's getting monotonous." He's bored of throwing people into the river to die.
With going to the river, yeah. So we'll use the lake. Okay, yeah.
I now have a cat joining me.
Okay.
It's Bluey. She loves me.
He's got a buddy, too. Now look over here. Yeah, okay.
Here, why don't you just go? Say hi. Hi. Now go.
Hey.
And then the other one I wanted to point out was after Superman rescues her from the laundry truck, and he jumps up to the Daily Planet, to the roof of the Daily Planet with the laundry basket, and Lois is inside. It almost seems as if he contemplates just leaving her in the basket for now, because he's saying that the most amazing thing about this whole experience is that for once, Lois is where she can't venture into further mischief. I'm going to read that again because the cat bumped against the mic and I'm sure that made a noise. And the most amazing thing about this whole experience is that for once, Lois is where she can't venture into further mischief in this basket, but it's too good to last. So I think that what he's saying there is, you know what? Maybe I should just leave her in the basket until this whole adventure is over to keep her out of danger. And that then he's like, I'll let her out.
Certainly would have changed the complexion of the story if he'd have done that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, this was, of the three stories we've read so far in this issue, this is probably my second favorite.
Okay.
Invisible Luther would be number one. This would be number two. And then, last week's the talent agency fraud would be number three at this point. And I haven't read the fourth one, so I don't know where that one's going to stack.
Yeah, no, yet. I haven't read it either. Okay, yeah, I think that's pretty much everything I can think to say at the moment.
Yeah, I think we covered it. I felt like there was one other thing I was going to point out, and I can't remember what it is. I did find the whole thing with the guy in the green hat, obviously that slipped past editorial, the fact that I guess his name was Carter.
Yeah, it's kind of a sideways kind of reference. I mean, we don't know for sure, and they never used it other than in that one word balloon in that one panel. So it's
I remember what it was, because I'm looking at that page where she says the name Carter. When Superman arrives at the War Department, or the Ordnance Department, and he finds that the door is bolted on the other side, he says something really weird. I don't quite understand. "So the door has been bolted on the other side. That's just an added incentive." Incentive to what? Break it open?
Break the door, I guess. Which it doesn't show really that he does. He just forces it open. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't super anything that we can tell. He doesn't destroy anything. Not like he did the safe last episode. It's, you know.
Yeah, he just puts his shoulder into it and it opens. But
yeah,
I don't know. I just, that was a weird, because sometimes, you know, we get a lot of moments where Superman is cracking wise. That's
right.
One of the things about Superman in the Golden Age that a lot of, you know, you don't hear a lot about, that he was a wisecracker. You know, he he was a dick. And I don't know if that this was supposed to be a moment of cracking wise. Like, you know, it's like, this just gives me more of an incentive to get in there and kick some ass. I felt that was a weird line. That's just an added incentive. Like, he's really excited to be able to force the door open.
Right.
I don't know. It was weird. But yeah. Okay. So on your end, with the three stories from Superman number 10 so far, where would you place this one?
Actually, I think that I like this one better even than the Invisible Luther.
Okay.
Because that was, this one was more entertaining to me. So this would be number one of the three, Luther second, and the Torn Safe story planking off the top of the door third. And if you guys don't get that reference, listen back to the previous episode. We went on about it for several minutes.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, episode number 78, The Talent Agency Fraud.
It's an awesome panel if you ever see it. But
yeah, if I was going to pick my favorite moment out of all three of these stories, planking off the molding of the door is the best.
That is awesome.
It's the best thing I've seen him do in a while.
It's truly unlike, I think, anything else we've really seen him do that is believable that a regular person can't do. I mean, jumping for miles and x-ray vision. No, he can freaking plank with one arm off the top of a door frame. It was something.
And I don't want to harp on what we've already covered in the previous episode, but again, it's one of those things that it makes perfect sense for his superpowers.
Yep.
And like you said, it's not anything we've ever seen before, but seeing it, it's like, oh yeah, he could do that, couldn't he?
Of course he could do that, yeah.
And then the other half of my brain is just going, there's no way that would allow that much weight, because it's as far as the weight being distributed to that molding, I'm assuming it would be more than just his 225 or whatever. It's got to be because of, I don't know, leverage or the way he's hanging there.
Well, I think it would be only the weight of his body, but it would only be in, you know, it would be displaced this much, the fingers and the half of his. So you're looking at, you know, 8 or 10 maybe square inches of 220 pounds and whatever that weight force multiplier would work out to be per square inch of force. So yeah,
it would like having the same effect of sticking a crowbar in there and then yanking on the crowbar. You know, the way he's hanging there, it would. But a lot of fun stuff though in this issue with the hypnotizing and Lois shooting Clark in the face.
The panel
with the bullet bouncing off his cheek, because he does look kind of pissed off, right? There's almost look at that, and at first glance, it almost looks like he's bored.
Right. Yeah.
There's another bullet bouncing off of my face.
You're going to shoot me in the face.
But at the same time, he almost looks like, did she just shoot me in the face? You know, like he's trying to hold himself back from reaching out and smacking her.
Yeah.
But that might be the panel, my favorite panel of this.
For this issue. Okay. That's fair.
But yeah, I think that's all I have to say about this one.
Okay. Well, everybody out there in real world land, thanks for watching along as we recorded. For everyone listening to the episode, want to thank you for listening. And remember, till next week, I'm Ed, that's Steven, and this has been the Superman Super Show. Ciao.
Bye.
Bye.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Superman Super Show. Questions and comments can be directed to the Superman Super Show at gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. The Superman Super Show is a presentation of Stephen or Else Media. For more nerdy content just like this, check out somanypodcasts.com or use the link in your show notes. Superman is a registered trademark of DC Comics and was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Oh, but wait, there's Superman. He'll save us. Superman! Superman! Wait, where are you going? Well, to hell with him. We'll have to deal with these marauders ourselves.